Hey guys, welcome to the Grumpy Dungeon Masters. I'm Jay, and my co-host.
Is Chris.
Getting a little better, less Eeyore this time. And we have another special guest with us, 2 weeks in a row, amazing. Ashley, if you want to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Ashley. Do you need me to say more than that?
No, that's perfect. That's very on brand for this podcast.
Well, for the people who don't know who you are, go ahead and just let give us your resume, so to speak.
Sure. So I'm Ashley Warren. I am a writer, storyteller, narrative designer, educator, et cetera, et cetera. Usually anything that has to do with writing, research, and education is where you will find me. I am the co-author of Icewind Dale: Rime of the Frostmaiden. I am the lead writer of Hecna by Hit Point Press. I've worked on some other projects, including Legend Lore and dozens of projects on Dungeon Masters Guild. I'm the founder and director of the Storytelling Collective, which used to be called the RPG Writer Workshop, and we still have that as a program under the Storytelling Collective umbrella. So basically what I do with my time is I write and I play tabletop games, and I help other people learn how to write and write for tabletop games as well. So that is pretty much my geeky existence at this point.
That's an amazing existence.
It's
Yeah,
working out
so
well for me.
yeah, pretty much everybody's dream job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still a little unsure of how this all kind of came to be for myself, but I'm very pleased with how my life has developed so far. So, yeah, can't complain.
Well, you started off as an educator, though, right?
Sure. So I have a background in English literature is what I studied in college, and then I went to graduate school for literacy studies. I always knew that I wanted to do something related to writing and teaching, just because that's what I enjoy. And I've always been a writer in some capacity, just in my life. It's something that I've enjoyed since I was a kid. My parents always really fostered that in me. And I didn't necessarily have dreams to be like a famous writer or something like that. I just knew that as long as I could write and do other things related to literature and literacy, that I would be happy. And so I've just kind of crafted my career with that in mind. But yeah, I consider myself both a writer and an educator, and then I kind of work at the intersection of that.
And be yeah, being a geek, you then get to combine the other aspects of it, the Dungeons and Dragons, or in this case, other RPGs, so forth.
Of course. And when I was in graduate school, I did a lot of literacy research on video games, which was definitely like a hot topic at the time. This was like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. And although in retrospect, I wish I would have studied more, Dungeons and Dragons and using that in classroom settings and using that as a literacy tool, because that's a whole current like wave of study, which is really cool. But I like to think that kind of researching literacy in the context of video games really set me up well for teaching narrative design and things like that in the future, because it's all very much related and those communities are really similar.
Yeah, we briefly talked. We had Jeff on here last week, Jeff Ludwig, and he sort of does somewhat of the same stuff that you do. He wrote for Prince of the Apocalypse and so forth, and we talked about it briefly about the rise of Dungeons and Dragons. So I grew up throughout the like I started playing Dungeons and Dragons in 1990 in rural Georgia, of all places. So it was frowned upon, if anything, during that time period. And just over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, it's become massive. Like, out of nowhere, everywhere you look on YouTube, that's all the videos I'm seeing is D&D this, D&D that.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. I think the public perception of D&D has changed a lot in the past couple of decades, especially
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
D&D used to be the activity that you didn't want your kids to do. It was, the whole satanic panic and all of that. And now it's like I keep seeing these articles, and my family, knowing that I do, work in the D&D field, they always send me articles, from the New York Times, and it's like, play D&D with your kids during the pandemic, 'cause it's like a fun, healthy activity. And it's just funny to see how the narrative around these kinds of games has shifted. I think that people are understanding more about what it actually means to play D&D, and that it's not this like activity that's, well, it might corrupt your kids. I guess it kind of depends on the games you play, and I'm not going to say that it doesn't, because it's whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, it'll corrupt them. They'll spend all of their allowance on dice.
Yeah, those shiny math rocks. I mean, there are worse things to spend money on, I think. But it's really cool, I think, and a positive thing to see how just the general societal discussion around these hobbies has changed for the better. And I think the perception is far different than it used to be.
Oh, absolutely.
So when did you actually get started with D&D? Specifically, like, not really just D&D, but like just tabletop. Were you a kid, or was it more like when you were into college?
No, it was well into adulthood. I will say that I knew about D&D when I was a kid, and I've always been a huge geek. I've always been really into fantasy and science fiction and just genre fiction in general. I was a big bookworm. I was into theater, and so I knew that D&D was an activity that somehow brought a lot of those things together. But growing up, I didn't know anyone who played D&D. I mean, if I did, they just never talked about it around me, which I think would have been kind of weird because I was really into fantasy, so I feel like someone would have brought it up around me, but I just didn't have any family members who played. I didn't really have any friends who were into that. I remember looking at some of the old D&D books at the library and just like looking through some of the creature manuals and being like, this is really cool. I don't quite understand how all of this works for the game. Like, I knew it was a game, but I also knew it was like a story that you do with other people. And I just didn't really have a good way into it. And I knew that eventually I would probably play D&D, and like any opportunity that came up for that, I was like, I knew I would be ready to, you know, explore it. But unfortunately, it just didn't really, you know, cross paths with me until adulthood. And it was actually about, let's see, 3 or 4 years ago, I think 4 years ago, all of my friends were like, we really want to all play D&D. And most of them were brand new to it, except for one of our friends who had been dungeon mastering for like decades for his siblings and just other people in his life. And he was like, well, why don't I just run a game for all of you? And if you like it, then we can keep playing together. And I was like, yes, please. I wanted to do this pretty much my entire life, and I'm really excited and ready to do this. And so we started playing D&D, and I was like immediately hooked and totally obsessed. And now that's where we are.
Yeah, you just described the literal purpose for this podcast, because the idea when I came up with this podcast was to put out information about being a dungeon master, specifically with the goal in mind of people who are new to the game and how to get them interested, involved, and you know, just expand on it. You know, if you've never dungeon mastered, there's a lot that goes behind that. It's not as simple as just, oh, here's an idea, here's the rules, let's do this. You know, you have to do prep work, you have to do some planning, and you have to keep all of these, you have to herd cats. I mean, really, right. You've got these players, you have to keep them involved, you have to craft a narrative. So, yeah, so being new at the time, all of your friends being new, I kind of feel for that DM, at least for a little while.
I mean, he's one of my players, which is fun, because now I DM our group session.
Excellent.
And so, yeah, the tables have turned, but he's awesome. And I really feel like for me, he was a great DM to like really cut my teeth on D&D, because he was just so patient with, you know, explaining the rules to us and just taking us through a story and helping us build our characters. And I think that there's, you know, lots of different ways that you can introduce someone to D&D. I'm personally the kind of person who responds well to, like, you know, a nice and patient approach rather than just someone throwing me into the deep end, because I also, like, he knew that we really wanted to play and that it was something that we would probably be really into. And so I think he really wanted to make it a good and positive experience. And plus, we were all friends already. And so it was just like a fun activity for us to do together, since we were already geeks who, you know, would play board games and do other things together. So it was kind of just kind of the natural evolution of that. But, you know, in retrospect, like, I wish that as a kid I would have thought to just DM a group myself. But even then, I'm like, I don't know who I would have invited. I feel like people would have been not super eager to do it, even my geeky friends. So I don't know. I think maybe I discovered it at the right time for me. My only like regret is that I haven't been playing longer, just because I love it so much and it's made like such a huge difference in my life. But I'm glad that eventually I came to it somehow, you know?
Yep. What edition? Sorry, Chris. What edition did you start with?
Oh, 5th edition. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a newbie still. I feel like sometimes I've definitely been accused of being a poser.
don't feel bad. Fifth edition was a great edition to start with.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a reason why D&D is so popular right now. I think there's actually many reasons. One of which I think is that 5e is a really good rule set. It's very approachable for the most part. And I think that people are, you know, watching other people play D&D.
5e and Critical Role. Like, yeah, 5e and Critical Role are what I attribute this to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that seeing how a game is played, I think, was huge for so many people. I didn't start watching Critical Role until after I started playing D&D, but I totally think that that is a way that people can get into the hobby. Because for me, like, growing up, I knew about D&D. I was familiar with it being like a game, but also a collaborative story. But I didn't quite fully understand how a game played out at the table. Like, how do you actually foster that? And so I think that breaking down the barrier and actually showing people, like, this is what a D&D game looks like. Look how fun it is. Like, it's silly and it's not, it doesn't, it can be as serious as you want it to be, is really a great way to kind of, you know, introduce people to the hobby. And plus, like, now there's so many other great actual play shows featuring all sorts of people from all backgrounds. And I think it's a lot more overtly inclusive than I think it used to be.
My wife's favorite D&D stream that she watches right now is just a bunch of puppets playing D&D. I can't remember the name of it right now.
Her favorite stream to watch should be yours.
No, I don't think she ever has. So you were introduced to D&D fairly recently. How did you get from being a very newer player and a newer DM to starting the RPG Writer Workshop and that evolving into the Storytelling Collective?
Sure. So like I mentioned, I've always been a writer. I've always been a storyteller. It's just always been something that's very important to me and kind of a core part of my identity. So writing something wasn't necessarily like new. But when I was playing D&D, it took about a year before I was like, oh, I could write my own D&D stories. What a concept. Like, I just really was learning to love the way that stories play out at the table, all the choices that go into that. And my DM had told me, you know, there's a platform called DM's Guild where you can actually publish your own D&D work, because I mentioned that I kind of wanted to try my hand at writing my own adventures. And I was actually inspired by a family trip to Italy that I had gone on like right before I started writing D&D content. And I was like, oh, it'd be really cool to write some adventure content that's like loosely inspired by all of this like culture and my own heritage. And so when I came home from that trip, I just like started writing my first one-shot adventure, not really having any expectations. It was more just like, this will be a fun creative outlet for myself because I love D&D. I love the way storytelling works in D&D, and I'm a writer by trade. So I might as well maybe combine all of these things that I love and give it a shot. Knowing that there was also a publishing platform where you could legally do that. And so I published my first adventure in December of 2017, and I just got like totally hooked on the idea of writing and publishing my own adventure content, and kind of producing the whole thing was really exciting and appealing for me, because typically as a writer, you don't always get to be the creative director of your own work as well. And I had worked before as a journalist. I had written fiction. I, you know, was a published writer in other capacities. And so it's rare that you get to like actually, you know, pick the art for the work that gets published and things like that. And so I just found that really fun. And I think I ended up publishing like one adventure a month for like 6 months in a row on Dungeon Masters Guild, because I was just like, this is the most fun I've had doing creative work in a really long time, especially having gone to grad school where I kind of like navigated away from doing fiction and creative work like that. So this was kind of my way back to that kind of storytelling. And so about 6 months in, with, you know, quite a few adventures under my belt, I've started to get a lot of new opportunities that came my way, people commissioning me to work on adventures and things like that. I had become a Guild Adept, which was a program through Dungeon Masters Guild and Wizards of the Coast, where they pick writers who published a DM's Guild to basically produce supplemental material for the official releases. And so I just like kind of suddenly found myself in this like strange new community, both a newcomer, but also pretty prolific at that point. And I was getting tons and tons of emails from people asking how to write adventures. And I obviously was still pretty new at it, but had at least figured out a way to put my ideas, actually like see those through to fruition, which is can be a struggle for a lot of creatives. And so I basically like put together a little workshop. It was just an email series the very first time. And I was like, hey, those of you who want to learn how to write at D&D Adventures. Let's do this together. It's going to be a 1 month workshop. It's going to coincide with National Novel Writing Month because they do a July and November workshop every year. And we're like, this will be our version of that. And it was just me, just my email content. And I thought it would be like, I don't know, 10 people would sign up and like 500 people signed up.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, let's see here. I am an educator by trade. I have a background in education. I don't feel totally unqualified to talk about writing because I used to teach writing in high school and in college. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to now maybe approach this less as a fellow creative and maybe more of like an educator. So I realized that there just was this demand in our community for education on this topic and a really approachable, way to get into this, because there's no shortage of educational content on the internet about writing D&D and learning how to dungeon master. And a lot of this content is really great, but it's not necessarily curated in a way that is very approachable for new writers, especially because my audience is writing writers, not necessarily dungeon masters. And so there is a difference between writing adventures for publication and writing adventures that you're going to use with your own home group. There's some crossover, but my goal was to help people feel empowered to publish. And so, yeah, after that first workshop, I was like, okay, I need to take this a little bit more seriously because there's clearly a lot of people who want to do this. And we have now a huge community. And then I kind of put together a more research-based curriculum for our next workshop, which we did in November. And I brought instructors on board to help me do that because I wanted it to be more than just me. It's just, I'm not an expert. I just happen to know things about the creative process and about teaching writing that I felt were helpful, but I don't necessarily have expertise on every aspect of the adventure writing process. And yeah, so that was all in 2018. And then it's just kind of, it's grown from there. Our community is huge now, and it just continues to be a really fun and exciting program to develop. But yeah, that's its origin story in a nutshell.
So I participated in the 2020 summer and fall courses for the RPG Writer Workshop. And I found them, you know, very enlightening. I'm a tech writer by trade. So I've been able to do user manuals and tech manuals and diagrams and flow charts. And I've had to write, you know, like a user manual for applications from beginning to end, you know, and take, you know, as they say in the office space, you know, I take the specs from the developers and give it to the clients, and from the clients back to the developers. So I was very good at writing tech manuals, and I've always been very creative myself, and I never thought I could, you know, put the two of those together and release something. I mean, I knew I could, but I didn't think there would actually be an outlet for that. And, you know, that's why when I saw the course on just some Facebook for the RPG Road Workshop, just on Facebook, I was just like, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. See, you know, what gaps in my thought process are there. And maybe this course can actually solve some of those problems. And then maybe I'll actually have a, you know, published adventure by the end of the month. And so I was actually able to do that, went through and completed it. And I think I'm at 350 copies sold right now, which is
more
than I could have ever have asked for my first adventure ever published. And I got Jay to participate as well in the summer one.
I made it to day five. I'm very ADD about this kind of stuff. Yeah, I've got 50 things going on at the same time all the time, so it's hard to keep focused on a single one.
Sure, and that is totally understandable. And we update our curriculum every year, and our goal this year is to try to make our curriculum a little bit more friendly for ADHD students, because that's a lot of people in our community. And there's a lot of really interesting educational approaches to that as well, because, you know, having our content be accessible is kind of a core tenet of our program. And we have a lesson about accessibility and how to actually design your document to be accessible. And so accessibility is like such a huge topic. There's so many ways to, you know,
that was I just want to point out the accessibility thing is actually where I bowed out. When I started having to read about the accessibility is when my brain shut off on it.
Yeah, it's tricky because that lesson, and that's another lesson that we're, you know, kind of restructuring a little bit. It's hard because for that lesson, it's very much about making your documents accessible in terms of being accessible by screen readers and, you know, blind TTRPG players and DMs.
It is important. I agree. It's very important. It's just for somebody like me, that's hard to get through.
Sure. Well, it's really it's a lot of it's really technical because it's like literally about how to set up your document. And so, I mean, that's where... you know, I feel like curriculum developers, myself included, can always do better because we don't want to have one thing be accessible to one group, but that makes it inaccessible to another group. So it's just, it's always a balancing act. And that particular lesson has evolved over the years that we've done it. And we're always, you know, adjusting things. That's why we update the curriculum once a year, is because no one workshop is the same. And as our community grows and changes, we try to adapt to that. But yeah, I mean, and that's kind of like, our perspective on curriculum in general is that there's no one creative process that is going to work for everyone. Like, our goal is not to say like, this is the only way to do something, because that is disingenuous. That's not how creativity works. That's not really how anyone works. Anyone who has very specific writing advice that they say is like the end all be all of advice is kind of full of it. So we really try to like, you know, base our curriculum off of the fact that like, we're just providing you a general framework. You don't have to do every lesson. You don't have to find every lesson helpful. If we can at least set you on the right path, then that's kind of that's our goal. We just want to help you get the ideas out of your head and onto paper so that you can publish and actually feel like you're meeting your goals. Because it's discouraging to have big creative ambitions and then feel like the years go by and you don't do anything about those. So that's really what it comes down to for us.
Yeah, like even within the few days that I was there, there was content that I got out of it that was extremely useful and will be in the future. Like, I am in the process of working on things to get to the DM's Guild. And when I am starting to get close to finalizing one of them. So pretty soon I'm going to need some of the content. I know Waples had, Chris here had some of it that I'll be using for how to structure things, some of the backgrounds and so forth. Like, there was just a lot of information I was able to pull just from those few days. So I'm sure Chris has a whole lot more stuff he was able to get out of it.
Yeah, like for me, you know, like I said, I've always been a technical writer, so being able to take, you know, you know, my thoughts and my creative process and the encounters that I've built and the NPCs that I've built and actually put them on paper was never really the issue. For me, it's always been procrastination and, you know, not having a schedule to work in. You know, I find myself not doing the work that I should be doing. So, you know, just joining the course and having that month and saying, hey, you're going to have this thing out by the end of the month, was enough for me to, you know, really kick me into high gear and get the publication out there, you know. And so now I'm sitting, you know, with two whole publications and I'm just waiting for the next summer course to come along.
He's going to use these courses every year. That's how he's going to get all of his stuff published.
Look, so, I get it. I mean, I feel like that's a huge benefit of just any sort of creative program that involves other creatives. I mean, our curriculum, we put a lot of time and effort into that, but it's really the community that I think makes the workshop so fun and rewarding, because you're working on your own project alongside, you know, thousands of other people who are also working on theirs. And there is kind of this energy and this incentive to, you know, be a part of that and to not miss out on that. And then also, like, publishing day is really exciting when people, you know, can finally publish their adventures. So I think that that's a huge benefit. And I think we actually have quite a few people who kind of treat it that way. They're like, you know, I know that I'm not necessarily going to work on my adventures at other parts of the year, but I know for sure that in July and November that I can focus on some projects that I enjoy. And we actually have something coming up in April that we're announcing soon. So just putting it out there, put it on mark your calendars. Okay.
Just let us know. We'll make sure to promote it for you as well.
Sure.
Yeah, like I said, when I was going through the courses, that's all I ever talked about the first, you know, couple 10 or 15 podcasts that we did. It was just my journey through the RPG Writer Workshop.
There's a lot of podcast content about that course.
Like I said, I found it all fascinating and definitely very helpful. And I don't think I would be where I am right now in this short amount of time. I don't think a lot of people would. I mean, I've seen a few people who have really Blossom's the only word I can think of right now, but they've really like found their stride in almost a professional capacity and are out there doing more streams and writing for other people now just through those courses alone from what I've seen. And, you know, that's fantastic. I'm also just to kind of go back on a previous point, you wrote an adventure a month for 6 months straight and became a guild adept. That's a heck of an achievement. Just getting the stuff written in a month and put out at the quality that it was, because I know what you're referring to. That's a heck of an achievement right there.
Yeah, that was a really interesting time. Like in retrospect, I think I just like it unlocked some sort of, you know, some aspect of creativity in me that I hadn't really explored in the years like leading up to that, at least not at that level. And I think part of it is that I went into it with no expectations. Like I had no idea what the audience was on DM's Guild. I didn't know anyone in the community other than the people that I played with in person. And I think that just making things that I wanted to play that I thought were cool and fun and atmospheric, and then like not really having any expectations was kind of a nice change as a writer, because I feel like so much of our time as writers is spent thinking about how our work is going to be received by an audience. And so I just remember being very pleasantly surprised by the audience on DM's Guild. Like I was not expecting my work to really be engaged with by like so many people, because again, I had no concept of like how many people even went to Dungeon Master's Guild or got adventure content off of there. All I knew was that it was just a platform for publishing that. And of course the community around Dungeon Master's Guild is so robust now and it's so active, but at that time it was still kind of quiet. So yeah, it was really unexpected that people would interact with those early adventures of mine. And I remember like when I got a few sales off of my very first adventure, like the day that I published it, and I like texted all my friends and I was like, you know, you guys don't have to like buy my adventure. And they're like, well, we didn't. Those aren't from us. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, that's cool, I guess, that people are buying my work. And so that was kind of an incentive too, is like, oh, this is an interesting approach to building an audience as a writer, because I feel like a lot of writers think about doing things the traditional way, you know, especially I think a lot of us still think of like writing a novel as kind of like the big thing that writers do. Especially people in my life, they're like, oh, I know you write D&D, but like, have you written a book yet? And I was like, well, yeah, I have actually written whole books, but they're D&D books. Like they're not, it's a little different there, but it's been kind of nice building a readership through independent publishing in that way. But yeah, I just was like, I don't know, those like 6 months in a row, I was just so excited and inspired all the time. And I just got into a really good process, which is what really led me to start the RPG Writer Workshop, was that it wasn't so much that I was an expert on writing adventures, but I knew a lot about process and creative process. And that's something that I'm big on just in all aspects of my life. That's what I work on with my mentorship program and all the programs that we do with the Storytelling Collective. It's all about having a creative process. And that process is unique to each creator. But when you can spend the time to actually form a process that helps you see your ideas through to fruition, you can do any project that you want to do, no matter how big it is. And so that's something that I'm really passionate about. So I just happened to like find a process that really worked for myself and was able to just, you know, put out a lot of work in a short amount of time. I don't recommend necessarily following that schedule because it was a lot. I wish I could say I slowed down after that, but I did not, because that's when I was very fortunate to start getting some really cool opportunities to write for, you know, publishing companies and things like that. So things actually kind of picked up after that point. And it's only really now that, I mean, I hesitate to say things have slowed down because that's not really the case. I think I'm just more selective now about the projects that I do and put more of my time and energy into the storytelling.
As you get your name grows, you're able to sort of pick and choose what you get to work on as opposed to taking the first thing that comes your way.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when you're early on in any creative career, and I've done this in other aspects of my life, like when I used to be a journalist, I would just, you know, take any project that came my way. But like, as you learn your craft and your trade and you learn like who you are as a writer, you can be a little bit more discerning. And I also learned that like, I really only want to pick projects that really, really excite me, because I know that those are the projects I'm going to do a really good job on, because I know that I'll put everything that I have into those. So yeah, now I feel like I do fewer things, but I like to think that the projects are better for it. and I'm lucky now that I can kind of focus on my own endeavors, which of course is the RPG Writer Workshop, which takes up, you know, a lot of my time with our 10,000 plus member community. And
wow,
yeah,
from 500 to 10,000 in 2 years.
It's been an amazing journey. And I mean, I feel like having an online learning program is like kind of, I wouldn't have necessarily thought that that would be like a dream of mine. In some ways I've always wanted to like found my own school. So this is kind of, I guess, my way of doing that. But it's kind of funny how creative careers always look like what you think they're going to look like.
I'd say you succeeded. I mean, you have 10,000 students.
I know. It's like, no pressure. Good.
Do you happen to know like how many people actually published something off of the November course?
I get that question all the time. I need to actually put together some real, we have lots of analytics, but not necessarily that number, because it's a little tricky to know that for sure, because a lot of people end up publishing, you know, maybe a couple months later. And sometimes people are hesitant to tell us that. It's like, we don't care when you publish. We want to support you regardless. It's not, just because you don't publish on the publishing day doesn't mean it's not still a huge accomplishment to publish. I think the best way to know that would be to just look at the bundles that we produce at the end of every workshop. We always just like ask anyone who's published to send us their adventure, and then we put them together on bundles on both Dungeon Masters Guild and on Drive-Thru RPG. Again, that kind of leaves out people who publish to Itch and other platforms. So eventually we'll put together something like that. I don't know. I mean, I think it was at least 50. But I think more than that, and then
it was well more than 50, because I think just from the bundles alone there was like 100.
That sounds right. I mean,
yeah,
there's always lots of numbers floating around in my head. Yeah, I'm trying to think, because we had like, I mean, I think we had at least 5 or 6 bundles, and each of the bundles has around 25 titles in it. Is kind of the sweet spot. So yeah, I mean, that's probably more accurate. I think over the course of the workshop, I mean, I think the number is well over 500 adventures at minimum. Wow. Just from all the participants who have gone through the program. But yeah, I don't know. Someday I'll have to actually put together real numbers. To me, that's not always the most interesting number. Like as the founder of the you know, organization, it's more about like I don't always see that as the completion number. Like publishing, of course, is great. It's more that who returned to do another workshop with us. Like did they get opportunities in the industry through, you know, the workshop? Did they collaborate on projects with other people? Like that kind of, you know, changes those numbers a little bit. So there's a lot of interesting metrics there. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure, to be honest.
Well, I mean, just the fact that, you know, so many people were able to join the course, do the course, and actually publish, you know, that's the main goal, you know, no matter what the number really was. And it's amazing to think that, you know, you have that many new stories coming out and being just thrown out into the universe for people to use. And I've gone through and bought and looked at as many as I could, and they're all fantastic. You know, I think your course is doing a really great job of, you know, letting people figure out how to put their thoughts down on paper and get it out there for people to look at. And, you know, there's definitely some people who are better at art, some people are better at NPCs, some people are better at encounters, but just to actually see that this is a growing, huge community, and people are just creating so much new work, I think that's just the best thing possible right now, being creative and putting that out in the universe.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily a matter of getting published completely. Like, you, just from what you can get from a creative writing course in general can teach you a lot about how to, you know, build your own encounters for your own, you know, own play group. Like I've been playing D&D DMing for a long, long, long time at this point, and naturally you get better over the years. And everybody, as you've said, they sort of have their own writing process or creative process for doing things. But even going through this type of a course, you can learn other methods to make your own homebrew stuff that much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, I think that our courses are whatever you want from them, you can take from them. And it's really like not everyone's goal is to publish, as you mentioned. And that's not necessarily something that we consider to be the end all be all goal of creative work. It's really just a matter of feeling empowered enough in your own ideas to do something with them, whether that's publish or just, you know, play them with your home group, which is also a wonderful thing. And I also agree that there's nothing bad about more creativity being put out into the world. And it is really exciting every workshop, like seeing all of the new adventure content that starts to, you know, flood Dungeon Masters Guild and Drive-Thru RPG. It's very rewarding, you know, to see that and be a part of people's creative journeys. But yeah, I mean, I think that the best kind of creativity comes from doing our like things for ourselves. Like, I think if you can just love writing for the sake of writing and not necessarily for the, you know, the elements of success that you expect to come from that, then like it's always something that will be rewarding to you. And we really try to foster a healthy mindset around that. Like, we're very anti-hustle culture. Like, we're not going to ever tell you you need to stay up all night writing to finish your adventure. Like, that's not something we'll ever recommend. Like,
see,
we want...
Chris, see,
it's that's what it I happens. Did. Well, it happens, and like, I mean, I also do that, especially when I'm on deadline. It's okay. Like, and but it's part of understanding your process. If you're someone who's like, look, I need to have an all night session in order to see a project through to fruition, that's totally okay. We just our goal is to help you make creativity a sustainable and organic part of your life, so that you feel like you're living a creative life and it's not something that is always hard, because creative work is very mentally demanding and writing is hard. And to be like a professional writer in any capacity or any sort of art, really, like, it takes a lot out of us. And so the healthier that relationship can be with our art, the better. And so even though like we focus on, you know, do an adventure in 1 month, like, I mean, that's a huge ask. We mostly just do that, though, because we kind of want to give you, you know, a crash course into the process, and then you can kind of go from there. And it might not be the most amazing adventure you ever write, but at least you finished something and you've been part of a community and part of something really cool. And then hopefully you're excited and inspired to continue doing that. And that's really where, you know, we hope to just foster that excitement in people. But yeah, it's
yeah,
cool.
There's nothing to say you can't take those adventures and rehash them later on, add the stuff that you wanted to add or didn't get time to add. Like, there's no reason you can't come back and edit stuff even after it's been, you know, posted.
Of course, yeah. And that's what's kind of nice about publishing to platforms like DM's Guild and DriveThruRPG, is that you can always revisit your content there and re-upload it, you know, make some changes. We have a lot of writers who do that, because once you write an adventure once and you publish it, you're like, okay, now I have a little bit of an understanding of how that process works. I at least know a little bit about my own process. I've done the thing. Then once you've done it, you learn from that experience, and then your next adventure is inevitably better. And then eventually, when you have enough content out, you might consider going back and you see things with fresh eyes. When I look back at my early work, I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
I know with Chris's last adventure he posted to the DM's Guild, like, he sort of hit that time crunch deadline, you know, for the 1 month, and he started having to cut things and hash it down. And the adventure itself was a lot of fun. My players, like, I ran them through it and they absolutely loved it, but it was we went through it in about 3 hours. And, you know, the initial adventure when he had it written up was 5 to 6, I think, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe at a later point, once you've got other stuff and you don't have any other content you're looking to put out, you need to go back and, you know, make some changes to it, make it longer, add more ridiculous encounters in there.
Go ahead. Sorry, Chris.
I'm saving all my ridiculous encounters for the next one that I hopefully I plan to have out in April. So now I have two things to do in April.
Lord.
But I know you're very busy, and I know we only have a limited amount of time. So there's a couple of things I want to ask you while I had you. So, you wrote some stuff for Icewind Dale. Both me and Jay are playing our own campaigns for Icewind Dale right now. Mm. His group is, you know, a nice lawful good group.
We are the good guys. We are by the book. I'm literally running it by the book.
Yeah, and I'm also running it by the book. At least I tried until my players decided to align themselves and swear fealty to the Ice Maiden or Frost Maiden, and have basically been going through now and basically turning like everything they can, and they're just, you know, doing everything for the Frostbane. And so I had to like take the campaign book and flip it on its head. But I was curious, like, what exactly did you contribute to that campaign setting? When we spoke with Jeff, he mentioned how like the Wizards kind of like said, here's like a bunch of things you can write for, pick one. Was that the same? Like, were you given a bunch of options, or did you write a specific portion of it?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both. When they brought our team together, the writing team, Chris Perkins had sent us basically like, here's all the chapters and here's all the sections. Let me know kind of what you would be most interested in doing. And then we kind of just divvy it up from there. So, I mean, it's been more than a year since I worked on this book. So let me see if I can remember the sections that I worked on. So I wrote, I think it's still chapter 6, Oriel's Abode. I wrote that chapter. It was actually
That's actually where I'm at right now.
Oh, nice. You're at Grimmskull.
Yes, I'm my players are standing out front of Grimmskull.
Yes, cool. Yeah, that was a really fun location to write for, and just that whole chapter in general. And it's funny because that chapter was actually a different chapter number when I wrote it. And so it's so interesting like how much changes during the playtesting process and things like that. So I wrote that chapter. So that was kind of like my big section, but I also wrote, I think it was the East Haven quest line, the Dugan's Hole. I wrote the Jarlmoot chapter, which is like the Ring of Frozen Frost Giants. Yep. I wrote Ongajuk's Bell, who's like the cool whale that you can befriend.
So you wrote East Haven, Ongajuk's Bell, Jarlmoot.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
All the good ones.
No, I don't think that's true. Honestly, like it was so, I love our writing team so much. We just like, we have such a good like bond now having gone through that experience together. And I genuinely love all of the things that everyone else wrote. I just think that the book is stronger when you have, you know, unique voices on it. Yeah. I'm trying to remember what else I wrote. I mean, that's probably most of it. It's all just
that's
a matter
a
of like, yeah, I
that
mean,
is a lot, yeah.
I mean, the book is, you know, as you both know, it's fairly substantial, and a lot of people work on these books, and our writing team is, you know, it seems big, but when you're producing a book of that size, you know, it does come down to, you know, pretty sizable assignments for each person. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely proud of my contributions. There's a character, I always get this as an Easter egg. There is a character who's named after a piece of IKEA furniture. So if you notice that, then I guess you win a prize. I don't know. I need to think of some sort of like.
Can you at least give us a hint what part of the book they're in?
Let's see.
If you could remember.
I think it might be in Oriel's Abode chapter. No, I actually can't remember. I don't know. I need to like have my answers ready for this because I get asked that a lot, and I'm just like, oh, let me think. We wrote it in 2019, so it's been a little while since I've like remembered the material.
Now that you've mentioned it, I'm going to find it.
It's slightly altered. It's not exactly the same name, but I had taken inspiration from a piece of IKEA furniture. Also, forgetting that is where I had got that inspiration, because I keep a list of cool names like just in a document for use in D&D material, obviously. You always have to have your list of cool names. And I pulled that one, so I was like, oh, that sounds rad. And then it was only later that I was like, oh, I remember where I got that name.
See, I unfortunately, as a DM, I fail horribly at that. I have so many NPCs named Steve and Bob, just tons and tons of Steves and Bobs in my world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that every DM, you know, feels that way. I feel like my list of names, I need to employ more when I'm DMing, because it's usually for writing projects. I feel like me as a writer and me as a DM are two very different people. Mm-hmm. I'm a very lazy DM, but I think it's because I write D&D content that by the time I go to DM, it's like, this kind of feels like work.
Yep.
I mean, I enjoy it. I don't want to make my players, I don't want it to sound like I'm just like grumbling.
Oh, we all love it. But you know, everybody has their procrastination moments. Like you need your free time, and D&D after a while, it does sort of feel like work. So it's easier to, I don't want to have to come up with the name of every single NPC that you're going to meet. That's just time wasted. I need to plan better encounters or monsters or this and that.
Right.
Yeah. I name all my NPCs Steve when I can't think of something. So I told my players like, hey, if you run across a Steve, you're so off book right now. I don't know what you're doing. And, So I was actually, putting my daughter to bed last night, and my wife was reading Goldilocks and the Three Bears story. And she was kind of changing her voice for it to be the, you know, the Papa Bear, the Mama Bear, and the Baby Bear. And I called her out on not having, you know, not changing her voice enough, because that's the, everyone's complaint for me as a DM is I don't change my voice enough, and they all the NPCs sound the same. So I called her out on that, and she goes, "Yeah, whatever you say, Steve." It's like, yeah, I get it. I see.
My brother's name is Steve, so I feel like he would probably not like it if I used his name a lot. So yeah, I'll have to think. I feel like I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know. I always come up with random names. I usually use a random name generator. Like, if I'm put on the spot, it's always something ridiculous, and I'm like, now I have to remember what this name is and put it in my notes later, because inevitably the players are going to ask, like, "Oh, what happened to so and so?" And I'll be like, "I don't remember who that is."
I have a notebook full of notes that are not in any order, so good luck me ever finding that stuff.
One thing we ask all our guests to do is to add a little bit of story to Craig. Jake, can you go ahead and just explain who Craig is for those who don't know?
Okay, for those who are not aware, Craig is the program that we use that records the podcast some of the time when he works properly. We have decided that we kind of treat him like another person in the chat. Occasionally we talk to him and so forth, and we decided we're going to make him a PC at some point. We're going to actually create the character. So slowly but surely, we've had every guest give us another little piece of his backstory. And mind you, it doesn't have to necessarily be backstory. You could just give him a stat if you wanted to. You could just give him little details that you want. So currently, Craig is a full orc bard from a barbarian tribe who has an older brother named Trevor who bullies him. Now, Craig only plays wind instruments, whereas the orcs, they like to play drums. So he gets picked on for that. He also has a fairy that hangs around with him, goes by the name of Flicker. And our last guest gave him a bag of holding named Ordu that used to be an ogre. It's just the head of an ogre that the players or the people turned into a bag of holding. So that's what we have with Craig for the moment. So Ashley, if you don't mind, try to come up with something else for this ridiculous character's backstory.
Okay. So Craig has a familiar, right? You said that he has like a fairy friend.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Okay. That was going to be my thought, but let's see. Okay. Well, he has a bag of holding. So I feel like Craig would be like a collector of some sort.
I mean, I can see that. Yeah.
So, I mean, other than, a random head.
I mean, that is a weird thing to have, a bag of holding that was an ogre's head. Oh, mind you, Ordu occasionally talks to him, asked him to feed it occasionally. Sometimes he gets things back, sometimes he doesn't. But
okay. So, I feel like that relationship would constitute, you know, having some sort of, like, collection or something that he's always on the lookout for so that he could feed his friend his bag.
So what is it he collects? Any ideas?
Like, looking around my office, well, let's see. I collect pocket knives, so
okay,
I'm gonna say I have a pocket knife drawer in my library. I have a little library cabinet in my office, and there's a drawer called Stabs, and it has pocket knives that I've collected. So I would say that's my weird collection.
Craig is a collector of stabby things.
Yeah. So he just likes, he likes anything that, stabs and,
That's very orcish of him.
Yeah. And he's got, he has refined taste, only the best stabs for Craig.
Yes.
So I'm going to say that Craig, he uses his bag of holding to store all the cool knives that he encounters on his adventures.
Yeah, so he is a collector of fine stabby things.
Yes.
Only the finest for him.
Only the finest.
That's awesome. Excellent. All right, well, so last but not least, we also ask all of our guests to share their grumpiest DM story. What was yours?
Well, I feel like lately every time I DM is a grumpy DM time because I'm grumpy a lot because of all the stuff with COVID and we've been playing online, and I do not like playing online because
Same.
Yeah, you're not the first to agree with me on that, unfortunately. It feels like a lot of people I talk to are like, oh, it's like, it's good in some ways because you can play with people who might not live near you. So there's like, of course, lots of benefits to that. But my group that I play with are all people that I know in real life, in person. And so part of the fun was getting together at my house and playing D&D. So now that we don't do that, I don't love it. And our sessions are, they're way shorter than they used to be, you know, just because I hate being on Zoom for long periods of time. So I feel like every time we start to play, I like am grumpy and usually complaining to my players. I guess I'm just in grumpy DM state most of the time. Let's see. I don't know. I mean, I think for the most part, I'm a really nice DM. I am always kind of, I feel like sometimes I probably make things too easy for my players. I should probably stop doing that. I just really want them to succeed. I want them to meet their goals and feel fulfilled. So I will say that, like, recently they attempted... So the adventure led them to this this grand manor. We're playing through Waterdeep Dragon Heist, and they get to this manor because they're looking for this like rogue nimble wight who might have this item that they're looking for. And my players are very thoughtful and very strategic, and sometimes I just want them to just do something because I feel like I need to reward that part of them, but also I'm just like, just decide. I feel like they overthink everything because I think they're so wary of everything. Like they assume everything's an enemy, everything's a mimic. And that hasn't really been the case in the campaign. So I'm not sure why those are their expectations. But they came up with this elaborate ruse to enter this manor. I thought they were just going to like break in, you know, one of them's a rogue. So I was like, okay, they're just going to lockpick their way in. But no, they decided to pretend to be rat exterminators. And they up with this like whole pitch. They're like, hey, we're here to like deal with the rats that are in your house. And, you know, of course, like the cultists who were occupying this house were like, no, we don't need that. And so, yeah, they basically like came up with this whole like scheme. And then they were like, you know, basically like surveying the whole campus that this like house, this manor is based off of, even though there was like an open door in the back the whole time. And I was just like, hey, you guys know that there's an open door in the back that you've already found. Cause they're like, well, we're going to climb up the balcony instead. I don't know. So yeah. So me being a grumpy dungeon master, I was basically like, just reminding you, here's the information that you have that you've already uncovered. I was like, I'm not trying to force your hand here, but you're making this extremely complicated for yourself.
That is what we refer to as the clue by four. Sometimes you have to beat them with the clue all the time. Yeah.
Well, it's like they already discovered it. Like if they hadn't already found, because they basically were like, we're going to walk around the perimeter of the house. We're going to go up to the balcony. We're going to try all the doors. And there was one door that they try and it was open. And then they're like, okay, well, we're going to go back up to the balcony and try to open that door that is locked. And I was like, well, okay, you know that there's already a place that it's in the back, probably a better entrance. I don't know.
They thought it was a trap or something. Like, it's too easy. The door's open.
They're so suspicious. And I'm like, look, you're in a city that isn't, like, it's a fun campaign because Waterdeep is such a cool city. And it's not always a city where there's lots of crime happening. It's not like in other places where, like, you should be always on high alert. Like, there's plenty of fun and, like, nice things to encounter in Waterdeep. But they're just very hesitant. They're very thoughtful. I mean, this is why they always do really well in battle. I really need to beef up the enemies because they just like do too well. And I'm just like, at some point, this has to be a little bit more of a challenge for you. I feel like the enemies that I put against them usually are pretty challenging for their level, but they're just really smart players. So, and I just need to be a smarter DM,
quality of player can definitely force an adjustment when it comes to encounters.
Sure. And it's like, go ahead.
I keep throwing my players through deadly encounters. I'm just like, I keep upping it like every single time. And they're just like breezing through it. Like, okay, well, what am I doing wrong? Why aren't they dying?
Yeah. Every session or every time they go into combat, like there's always one character who ends up, you know, taking a lot of the damage and stuff, but it's just, they always seem to somehow roll really well or just like navigate the situation like really thoughtfully. So I don't know. I just need to put them up against really smart villains, which is part, you know, eventually we'll get there. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, I love my group. They're so much fun to play with, but it's just, it's funny because sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to force you to do anything you don't want to do, but I'm just going to remind you of the information that you've already collected so that you can make an educated decision.
Yeah, I do that a lot as a DM. I do it as a player too. Like as a player, I'm a very, very strategic player. I will lay out our options to the group constantly. And as a DM, I do the same thing. I will throw out the options and I will remind them of the options multiple times just so they know exactly the routes they can take. And like if I'm doing it in person, I don't do that as much. But when you're playing online, you sort of have to control where your players go because you have to have the map. You got to have the map set up and all the tokens and so forth.
No, that's more than I do. We just play on Zoom, and I sometimes just screen share. Lately, I just screen share the map of Waterdeep.
I run on Roll20, and Chris runs on Foundry, I think.
Yeah, I actually downloaded a program called Foundry and do my maps for that. And I figured, hey, since you know I'm already going to be doing this interactive, you know, like the players can actually control our tokens on my end. And I have animations and stuff like that and big maps and line of sight and all that stuff. It's like, you know, since I'm going to put all this work into this online, you know, D&D game, I might as well stream it. And that's why I've been streaming my D&D games for the past couple months.
Yeah, that's awesome. Actually,
they spent four weeks in a Dark Dwarf stronghold. Just saying, 4 weeks in the Duergar stronghold.
It happens.
Yep.
So we're at the hour. You said, I know you said you had another meeting after this, so I don't want to keep you from that. I do want to thank you greatly though for joining us with us today and talking with us, and hopefully we can get you back again sometime soon and talk some more D&D stuff.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I had a good time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I would be delighted to come back. My schedule so far this year has just been a little unpredictable and hectic, but hopefully it won't last forever. So yeah,
well,
you launched a whole
website, so I mean, you get some passes.
I'll take that.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much. It was an honor having you on, and I look forward to the next course and for the RPG Writer Workshop, and I'll do my best to get Jay to participate again this time.
I think I'll be able to this next time.
Yeah, I'll try. I think you'll like some of the updates that we're making. It'll definitely be a different new experience. So I hope you'll come back.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
All right. Thank you very much, and have a great rest of your day.
Yep. Hey guys, thanks for listening to our podcast. If you will, please check us out on our social medias on Facebook.
Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
Twitter.
@ Grumpy DMs. _DMs.
Instagram.
Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
And every Saturday night at what time?
8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
On?
Twitch.tv/Grumpy Dungeon Masters.
Fuck yeah.